Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, why the FBI is getting into the act on the J.P. Morgan Chase loss. Also on the day of Facebook's IPO, actually getting out there, the CEO of another major social network site will join us, David Karp from Tumblr. And we have a very special guest later this morning in our End of War series, Michelle Bachelet. She's the former president of Chile. She was also their defense minister for a time, and she now heads UN Women, which tries to get women around the world more involved in conflict resolution. So Michelle Bachelet coming up as part of End of War. Before we get to Heidi Moore for Marketplace on why the FBI is getting into the act on the J.P. Morgan Chase loss, just want to remind you that this is day four of our spring membership drive. Thank everybody who pledged along the way so far, and let everybody know that we have a special few moments here on the Brian Lehrer Show. I don't know how long this is going to last today, but this is going to be the only time during the entire pledge drive where there is a dollar-for-dollar match in effect, because the Alex J. Eddy Foundation has offered this matching money as an incentive for you to join them in their enthusiastic support of WNYC. They will donate $1 for every single dollar that you donate. We don't have as many dollar-for-dollar matches as we did before the economy changed. So we want to take advantage of every dollar that the Eddy Foundation is offering, Edel Foundation, forgive me, Alex J. Edel, E-T-T-L, is offering WNYC. So please show us your generosity to help us take advantage of their generosity and for you to support the station. Please call us at 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. One more time before you go out on this gorgeous morning, make that pledge for 2012 for WNYC if you haven't done it, and you'll be doing it in the only dollar-for-dollar match period during this whole membership drive. It started on the morning shows, and it's going to end on this show, so please help us take advantage to the full extent that we can from the Alex J. Edel Foundation's generosity through yours. 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or online at WNYC.org. Thank you all so very much. Now, the FBI getting involved in probing how J.P. Morgan Chase lost $2 billion in 6 weeks, and the true extent of the losses remain a mystery. Heidi Moore, the New York Bureau Chief for the public radio program Marketplace, was on with us Monday to start the week on this story, some of you may remember, and she is good enough to rejoin us here on Friday. So hi again, Heidi.
Hi again. Yeah, this story should be live for many weeks. So
unfortunately,
we'll be talking a lot.
For a lot of people. Now, so an investment firm can risk money and lose money. That doesn't make it a crime. Why is the FBI getting involved?
Yeah, that is, the FBI isn't saying why they're getting involved. They haven't revealed to that yet, but their head did say in front of Congress that they are opening a preliminary investigation. So as you know, the FBI can only get involved if there's criminal activity. Right now, we don't know enough about J.P. Morgan's loss or how it got there to know if they did anything criminal. I mean, quite frankly, right now it just looks like garden variety stupidity. But if the FBI senses that there might be something like insider trading or hiding information from legal authorities, then that's probably what they'd be looking for, something along those lines.
You have a column this morning saying we could get Friday night type chills contemplating how much more money J.P. Morgan Chase might lose because we don't know how much they actually had at stake. What do you mean by that?
Well, because J.P. Morgan, the kind of bet that they made on derivatives, we don't know how much money they put into this trade. And there's also something called the notional amount or face value of the derivatives, which is not the money that they have at stake, but kind of just the paper value of all those bonds that they wanted to bet on. So some people say that that paper value was $100 billion. Some people say $150 billion. Some say $200 billion. And I've even seen $300 billion. So there's no such thing as $100 billion margin of error, We don't know how much their face value bet was. We don't know what their actual bet was, how much real money that they put into the trade. We haven't yet unwound the trade. We don't know what exactly they put their money into in terms of these corporate bonds and derivatives. So it's impossible for us to know what their bet is, and it's impossible for them to know what their losses could be, because they still have to judge the market. There are a lot of people now betting against them and trying to move the market against them, which could also increase their losses. So really, it's just a big swamp of unknown information.
So we know one thing for sure, and that is that J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon was wrong when he originally called this just a tempest in a teapot when it started to emerge a couple of weeks ago. So I want to play a clip of Jamie Dimon on Meet the Press on Sunday when he was asked why he originally said this was a tempest in a teapot. Here was his response.
So first of all, I was dead wrong when I said that. I obviously didn't know, because I never would have said that. And one of the reasons it became public was because we wanted to say, you know what, we told you something was completely wrong a mere 4 weeks ago, and we took a $2 billion loss, and we made it clear it could get worse before it gets better.
Now, that was interesting to me, Heidi, in light of your column and the idea of not knowing how much is at stake. Do you really think Dimon didn't know when he said tempest in a teapot, or was he dissembling to kind of, you know, tamp it down when this first started to emerge?
Well, I think we should reserve judgment until we get the facts, but what's definitely true is that he had not done his homework before he said that tempest in a teapot. There are only two options, really, in a situation like this. Either the person is lying or they're incompetent. Lying gets you in jail and it gets you fired. Incompetence just gets you criticized. So clearly, you know, incompetence or not knowing or ignorance is the more appealing claim to make. Whether it's true, we have to wait for the authorities to really verify. There have also been other reports today that, you know, the bank, that he didn't question the head of the losing business unit enough, that he let them get away with a lot, that he didn't look at their losses. That all bolsters that point. But again, we need to have the rigor of law enforcement. You know, the FBI, the SEC, other regulators are looking at this to really know whether that's true or whether it's a convenient explanation.
Defenders of Dimon and the company say, yeah, it's a big loss, and maybe we don't know how big yet, but it's a private loss, not a public one. No bailout, no threat to the greater financial system, and J.P. Morgan Chase is still highly profitable for the year. So what's all the hoo-ha in the media? Do you think that's the right way to look at it?
No, I don't. And don't you love this this line of argument, really? Hey, no bailout, no harm, no foul. You know, I mean, a bailout is an extreme condition, right? I mean, we that's not our standard of responsible money management. You know, we're not the limit for what kind of irresponsibility we can allow among banks is not whether the government has to step in. That should be off the table. But it's also not a good argument, because the money that J.P. Morgan was betting is public money. It's money from, I mean, maybe private to them, but it's really public money. It's my deposits and yours. These are excess deposits that regular customers put into J.P. Morgan over the past few years and that the bank was betting with. This is not their allowance. This money has a purpose. It's meant to be there to lend to companies, to pay people, to help fuel the capital markets and keep the global financial system running smoothly. It is not a piggy bank. And so when people say, hey, it's only $2 billion, it's not their $2 billion to play with. You know, it's not a cushion for them to fall back on. This is money that has a purpose, and the purpose is not irresponsible speculation or doing whatever they can to raise their stock price.
When you say it's everybody's regular deposits, if somebody has a little savings account or a checking account with Chase, that money is safe no matter what happens to J.P. Morgan Chase, because it's federally insured under FDIC if it's under $250,000, right?
It is. That's true. But have you ever tried to get your money back from the FDIC? And, you know, is it really worth it for whatever small checking account that you have? I mean, it's not, this isn't, you know, the kind of situation where that money is lost forever. But it's also not a situation where those deposits are meant to fuel these kinds of bets. Those deposits are meant to be lent out to people and to companies. You know, this kind of risk-taking behavior in high finance was never in the history of finance what those deposits were meant for.
Heidi Moore, the New York Bureau Chief of Marketplace, talking about the latest developments in the J.P. Morgan loss. You know, I didn't realize until all this broke that CEO Jamie Dimon also sits on the New York Federal Reserve Board. So Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner was asked on the PBS NewsHour last night if, in light of this huge loss, Dimon should resign from the Fed. Here's that exchange. The questioner is their one of their reporters, Jeffrey Brown.
Do you think Jamie Dimon should be off the board?
Well, that's a question he'll have to make and the Fed will have to make. But again, on the basic point, which is it is very important, particularly given the damage caused by the crisis, that our system of oversight and safeguards and the enforcement authorities have not just the resources they need, but they are perceived to be above any political influence and have the independence and the ability to make sure these reforms are tough and effective so we protect the American people again from a crisis like this. And we're going to do that.
Treasury Secretary Geithner on the NewsHour last night. And Heidi, that was a lot of gobbledygook, but at least one renowned economist and commentator, Simon Johnson, you know him, said this morning that he thought that answer was Geithner telling Dimon to resign without quite saying it explicitly. Did you hear it that way?
I did not hear it that way. I think what comes across, however, is that Jamie Dimon has committed the one unpardonable political sin, which is that he has embarrassed the president and he has embarrassed the administration. Just a couple of weeks ago, the President Obama was on The View, and he was talking about how Jamie Dimon was the banker who got it right. He was the one who, you know, helped save the financial system. You know, fast forward a couple of weeks, and he's the one who has made the biggest blunder in the financial system that we have seen in 3 or 4 years. So he's embarrassed the president. He's made the president look foolish for supporting him. And by extension, he's done that to Treasury Secretary Geithner. And in politics, that's the one unforgivable sin. You cannot make the people in power look foolish. Though, you know, that's the story of the Hunger Games as well, right?
Right. I never thought of the Hunger Games in relationship to this. That's an interesting point. But the Fed is not supposed to be a political body.
Exactly. It's not a political body. And the type of director that Jamie Dimon is, he's called the Class A director on the Fed, which means he was chosen by other member banks to represent their interests. But the Class A directors don't actually exert any influence over supervision. They basically advise the Fed if the Fed has questions about how big banks are run or so on. So he doesn't actually have any power there. He's a figurehead. And that's what gives Tim Geithner sort of the power to say he's not a good figurehead right now. He's made an irresponsible choice. Do we want this figurehead? But at the same time, it's not like he's actually, you know, effecting any change at the Fed. So it might just be a symbolic gesture to remove him.
In other words, they let the banking special interests who the Fed is supposed to oversee have seats on the board to lobby the Fed from within, even though they don't have a vote?
Well, the banks are part of the Fed. You know, they have those interests whether or not we like it. It's part of the Federal Reserve Act. So, you know, they can use it to lobby, they can use it to advise, but it's their right to be there. People who are for that argue, consider the alternative. What if those banks didn't have a voice with the regulators and, you know, and couldn't really inform them? What if you didn't have those moles, you know, basically telling you about the banking system? Mm-hmm. Yes, they're going to speak for their own interests, but at the same time, they do have some marginal value because banking is complicated. And as a regulator, you don't get to see that. You know, a lot of regulators haven't worked at banks, so they don't get to see the inner workings the way that bankers do. And unfortunately, that's where all of society is. This is why Congress has trouble writing laws about banking. How many of them have worked at a bank? Almost none.
We just have a minute left, but I'm curious about one other thing. Congress is in the midst of finishing the Volcker Rule, and that's the regulation under Dodd-Frank that would make it harder, in theory, for banks to take risks like this or similar to this. And there's debate over whether these losses highlight what's being called the J.P. Morgan loophole, because apparently Jamie Dimon went to Washington recently and argued for a loophole for J.P. Morgan and other banks in the Volcker Rule. How much do we know about whether political influence by the bank that then took the losses enabled them to take the losses?
You know, it might well be. What that political influence did was it gave the bank enough standing to say, look at our track record, we're a strong bank, to go to Washington and say, your rules aren't good. That standing is now gone. So the landscape has changed significantly. So let's see how it happens going forward.
Great. Heidi Moore, New York Bureau Chief and Wall Street Correspondent for Marketplace. You've been great on the show twice this week, made so much of this complicated stuff so much clearer for our listeners. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with the Facebook IPO coming out this week, today, this morning, in about 35 minutes, we will have the CEO of another major social networking site, David Karp from Tumblr, as our next very special guest. Stay with us.